There's the big board, the 20 electoral votes from the state of Pennsylvania. We just got new metrics in.
The inauguration of a president celebrates a peaceful transition of power engineered by the American voters.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hi, and welcome back to the 45th podcast. This is Robbie. I'm here this week with Siraj and Susan. Hi, guys.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Hey, Susan, how are you?
I'm good. Can I just say, I know it's a bit early now. We're only on the 41st episode, but I can't wait for the 45th episode of the 45th. We're nearly there.
Oh, my God.
Oh, man.
I didn't even think about that. 45th squared.
The golden episode.
There we go.
It could be really important.
That is definitely in the week Trump's getting impeached. It's fate.
Okay.
Or so there'd be some indictments, some exciting, juicy indictments.
And then you got to buy a new Twitter handle to get to represent for the 46th podcast.
You know what?
Already got it taken care of.
That's right. Susan is way. To be honest, when we started this, Susan's like, I don't know how long this guy's going to last. Let's go ahead and reserve the 46th while we're so at this fun. Domain that's name so, and everything. So we're good to go.
That's too funny.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All right. So there's a lot to talk about. As of right now, we all know that the government has been shut down. Trump's been shut down. It's been an interesting weekend, but the cities have been lit all across the country. A lot's been happening. So let's start off by talking about the hundreds of thousands. I think millions of people have been marching this weekend. The second women's march happened this weekend.
Well, if you're looking at the news, you wouldn't hardly know that anything happened at all.
Well, I'm watching Twitter. I'm watching it on Twitter. I don't even watch it. But really, it's not getting coverage, really, on the network news?
I've seen coverage.
Hardly, not that
of
I've
it.
Seen. Not to the degree. I mean, imagine the tea parties when they're going on. Like, every single week, you'd have even small protests, massive coverage. And other than, like, personal
Twitter
photos, I haven't
seen
coverage,
much. Because I've definitely seen it on CNN and MSNBC. On Fox, they've definitely covered it. I've seen reporters down covering it. I'm just kidding. Maybe they didn't cover it to the extent as they did last year, but they definitely covered it. Now, if we want to talk about comparisons and rallies, the March for Life happened on Friday, which I went to and I covered. And that got basically zero.
Wait, which march? Which march?
The March for Life.
What was that?
It's like all teenagers.
It's not all teenagers.
Experience from living in D.C. It's all you see.
That was where Trump spoke at the pro-life rally?
Yeah, the pro-life march. Okay. Yeah, yeah. So like,
well, how big was that compared to the women's march?
It was much smaller than the women's march, for sure. But then it was actually smaller than last year. Last year, Pence spoke, and that was a week after inauguration. But like, comparatively speaking, like, you know, a rally in which Trump speaks at, not getting as much coverage as the protest against them. I mean, that's still
he speaks all the time.
That's pretty crazy. I mean, yeah, he does. He also
I want to hear about his message. What was his message?
Well, it's interesting. I spoke to a lot of folks who are over there, and you know, they're very critical of Trump with respect to everything else that he's done, but they were actually very appreciative of his moves and pro-life policies. And one thing that I did notice I was missing, and this is just something that, you know, if pro-lifers and conservatives have any hope of overturning Roe v. Wade, it would be through the Supreme Court. And none of them mentioned, or at least the people I spoke with, none of them mentioned Neil Gorsuch being nominated to the Supreme Court. And I didn't hear any Congress member. I didn't hear House Speaker Paul Ryan, who also spoke there. I didn't hear him about appointing Neil Gorsuch to the Supreme Court. Of course, I could have missed it, but at least with the people I spoke with in the crowd, they weren't mentioning it. So it's interesting. They appreciate his moves on the issue of abortion, but they didn't really get into the weeds or details about what he's actually done. That was just interesting.
It's kind of awkward to do, though, when you have a president who is obviously in public life, has a record that keeps catching up with him of, you know, extremely non-biblical behavior.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, like, I asked,
I think it's very biblical, man.
To say, yeah, or extremely biblical. Hey.
Yeah, I mean, I asked people what they thought about Trump and his previous stance on abortion in the sense that he was pro-choice back as far back as, like, 1999. And everyone was like, oh, yeah, he's evolved from that. Like, he's definitely if he's not the most pro-life president, he's definitely one of the most pro-life presidents. So
he has absolutely paid for abortions. No one's gone on the record yet, but there's all those articles out there. But people are talking to people who have been with him. It's not a secret.
What's not a secret? Not a secret? I didn't hear that.
That he's paid for abortions.
That he has paid for abortions.
That's pretty bold. That's a pretty bold claim.
Before the election, there was all this coverage. It was kind of like the Stormy Daniels stuff.
So, Raj, you're going to have to dig down into this. I want to see your investigative piece on this.
I will look into it. I'll tell you that.
All right. Well, I saw a clip of Trump mentioning at that rally, a very short clip, saying that, you know, we want to see Roe v. Wade overturned. But I don't know if he mentioned Gorsuch's, or I can't even say his name.
Gorsuch's
appointment either. I don't know if he did or not, but maybe they're just all failing to connect that really big fat red dot for some reason.
But when does he not mention it?
I mean,
it's his go-to thing for proof that he didn't suck at everything.
It's pretty much his. I mean,
he doesn't mention it when it's actually relevant. How about that?
His go-to has been the economy. Now, the economy has been objectively performing very well under his watch. While he's been present, I'm not saying he's the sole person responsible for it. Mm-hmm. Barack Obama definitely helped a lot, but we haven't had a market crash and we haven't had any bubbles burst yet. So
I am all in favor of Trump taking credit for the economy right now, because it is going to crash and it's not going to be all that much longer. And the rate he's going, he's going to have a hard time not owning it. He'll try. He'll be like, okay, all the good parts of the economy till now are mine. This thing that's horrible happened yesterday when Bitcoin short selling destroyed the entire market economy in the whole world. That was all Obama.
One thing that I found interesting, though, with respect to the Women's March was, you know how he took credit for like commercial flights not having any crashes or fatalities? He was kind of taking credit for the Women's March, and that was that to me,
gaslighting 101.
That was so. I laughed out loud when that happened. That was just too funny.
Should we? That was not his tweets. His tweets always have bizarre capitalization. It's not his style. There wasn't a single noun that was capitalized like a German.
It was remarkable. I kind of did a triple take. I'm like, wait a minute. Okay, this is what Trump tweeted. He goes, beautiful weather all over our great country. A perfect day for all women to march. Get out there now to celebrate. Although he did capitalize March and women. Get out there to celebrate the historic milestones and the unprecedented economic success and wealth, because that's why they were there, that has taken place over the last 12 months. Lowest female unemployment in 18 years.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. Kind of crazy.
That's Trump for it. That's a troll in chief.
Yeah, he didn't write it. I maintain that.
Yeah.
I mean, look at his like follow up tweets. It's like women, all caps, tax cuts, big 2018, record stock market, strong military, crime, borders, ISIS, Judas Watch, numbers, lowest unemployment.
Trump tweet.
Yeah. There's the word salad, and then there's the, you know, our new style of diplomacy via.
Who do you think is doing? Who do you think is doing the alternative tweeting? Who is it? Kelly?
Scavino does a lot of them, but not all of them.
Dan Scavino,
I think it's
probably
Sanders.
I think Scavino is the one guy who writes his tweets for him.
Most of them. I think it's probably, I mean, who knows, but it's more like a Sanders one to me.
I mean,
Scavino's a little bit more juvenile.
So the marches, it seemed, once again, had like, you know, ridiculous, unprecedented turnouts, right? In like LA, apparently almost a million women. I mean, like really crazy. But the question really is then, what is the impact of this? I mean, is this on the administration at all, if any? It's just, they're like rubber. I mean, like nothing, it's just completely ignored. I mean, like, I don't think it's having any impact on them. And unless there's, you know, some kind of sustainment momentum throughout the year to then take what, you know, all the issues that are concerning these women at these rallies and then like, you know, get actual policy changes, get women to run, although that is happening.
The way I see it, the women's marches are training for organization, for the organizers, for the rallies and marches that will really matter when he fires Mueller.
Okay, so you know what? I think that might happen. And then what? I used to be that person who marched. I used to go to a lot of marches. I really did. And now I'm just like, and after Iraq, after Afghanistan, I was like, it kind of doesn't matter. Nobody cares.
It does. I mean, when you have the numbers, it matters. And not just unprecedented numbers, not just record-breaking numbers. Like, flood the street numbers.
In other countries, marches bring down governments. People resign. I mean, like, would
GW... Things have to be really bad for that to happen. It have not hit that bad level here yet. I think if he fires Mueller, what you'll see will... Nothing like past marches of any era in the U.S.
Well, hey, so were you in D.C. during the march, Susan?
Yes, but I was working all weekend.
Okay, so you didn't actually get out into it. Yeah, I couldn't make it either.
The weather was nice, too. I was like, oh, it's going to be, like, cold and nasty. I don't want to go, but it'd be nice. Really, and I still couldn't go.
I was on the verge of going, and then it was too late for me to go. I was thinking of covering it, but I couldn't really find a good angle to cover it that every other outlet was covering it. So
that they're already doing.
Yeah, I know.
All right, so let's move on. That happened over the weekend. I think Sir Raj, you wanted to talk a little bit about some more stormy weather, stormy Daniel stuff. There was a little more information that came out this week.
Yeah. So I wrote a column this past week about Trump's alleged affair with an adult film actress by the name of Stormy Daniels.
So, Rabia, how's your training going for your 8K?
You know what? It's actually going pretty well. And what I discovered is this, and I'm not kidding. A couple of weeks ago when I started training for it, I went to the gym a couple of times and I just put on some sweatpants. And they totally were a drag on me. And the next week was like transformative because I wore like some of the best leggings that money can buy, and they're called Fabletics. I'm not kidding. It was suddenly like I actually ran better. Probably because the fabric is amazing. It's light. It's very comfortable. It wasn't like a drag on me. I felt like a runner. And you know, I mean, Fabletics are, they're really some of the best leggings I've ever had, and they're just fantastic to work out in.
Yeah, and a huge part of keeping fitness fun is switching up your workout routine and just trying new things in general. So nothing like new leggings to get you out there running again.
Well, Fabletics was founded by a very well-known actress, Kate Hudson. It's really premium activewear, some of the best activewear you can get, and it's a great value. It's really fashionable too. They have some really, really cute styles. And, you know, they say they make the world's best leggings. They make that claim, and actually, I think they might be right.
Their leggings are available in all sizes from XX small to 3X, and in petite, regular, and tall lengths.
You probably need a tall length, right?
Yeah, no, I absolutely do. They're amazing for that because, like, leggings go to my calves. It sucks.
I'm sure you have lovely calves. It's all good.
So go to fabletics.com/45th today to get two pairs of their amazing leggings for just $24 when you become a VIP member. Seriously, these are the world's best leggings. They are a $99 value, and you'll get two for only $24 when you join at fabletics.com/45th.
And by the way, every single month, Fabletics releases new styles, and that's why you want to become a VIP member. It's definitely something to look forward to. You go on the website, if you like the styles, you get them. And if you don't, guess what? You can just skip the month. You don't have to get it. So once again, that's fabletics.com/45th to get two pairs of the best leggings of your life for $24. Try it out today.
Now, if you're not familiar with this story, the Wall Street Journal reported that the president's lawyer, Michael Cohen, arranged a $130,000 payment to Daniels in exchange for her silence about an alleged sexual encounter with Trump in 2006, and even signed a non-disclosure agreement in October 2016. Now, this past Tuesday, CNN's Oliver Darcy reported that Fox News spiked the story in October 2016 about this particular affair and couldn't publish it because it lacked, quote, independent corroboration, end quote. One thing that was interesting is that Daniels denied that any affair took place with Trump in 2006. But In Touch Weekly, a magazine, I don't know if you want to call them a tabloid. I don't know if they're like a celebrity magazine if you're not familiar with them. But they posted a story suggesting that the alleged affair actually happened and that they had exclusive unedited details from that interview that took place in 2011, which was before the non-disclosure agreement. Now, if you have read it, I'll just get to the too long didn't read version. They definitely had an affair, according to this interview. And Trump basically, and it was consensual, as opposed to, you know, the whole, quote, grabbing by the pussy comments that Trump made about bragging about sexual assault. This one seemed to be consensual.
Okay. At the same time, again, this goes back to the whole problematic issue, though, with, like, he pulled a Weinstein on her. You know, things aren't always black and white. But the fact the president of the United States once felt okay to, like, get his clothes off and hop into bed when someone went into the bathroom, so she came out to see that, that's disturbing, too. I'm not saying it's not consensual,
but how do you qualify it as a Weinstein thing? Because Weinstein had power over his victims in the sense that he would promise them budding careers in the film industry.
And what did he promise her? What did Trump promise her?
We don't know what he promised her.
Yeah, he promised her that he could make her on The Apprentice and make her like, you know, a legit star instead of just porn.
You know that
I'm not saying they're exactly identical, but it's the same damn pattern.
Yeah, no, I mean it's not identical. But yeah, it's Weinstein-esque. I'll give you that. I'll concede that point. But of course, like, this is not even the biggest story of the week. Everybody's focused on the shutdown. They're focused on what's going to happen to DACA and building the border wall. And this is the type of like scandal that ends presidencies. And
but here,
yeah, I mean, like, of course. And if you recall what happened in 2006, Melania, his wife, gave birth to Barron. And at the time of this alleged affair took place, she was 4 months. This is 4 months after Barron was born. So she's at home nursing Barron. And you think about Trump, you know, basically getting around with other women. This is obviously in many ways very disturbing. And you have to think about, for someone like him, who many people think doesn't have any integrity, doesn't have any principles, it's obviously very troubling because his morality, integrity, and character should constantly be subject to scrutiny. And if morals inform one's judgment, Trump's judgment is tainted and compromised, and that can directly impact the American public. If you think you're above, I mean, if you think you're above the law, even when it comes to something like marriage, which, you know, in this case, infidelity, you know, what else is it that he could be compromised or corrupted by?
The reason the story is not getting attention is because people doubt it. It's because they know it's true and it's boring because they know he's a skeez.
Nobody's surprised.
No one doubts for a second that he's just a terrible human being.
It's like, okay, yeah, that's exactly what I expect of him, and not just with her, with many other women. I mean, like, I really think he has absolutely no reason other than what Susan talked about last week, no reason to even deny it happened other than just his ongoing crusade to, like, obscure the truth and confuse people about what reality is. But other than that, it wouldn't hurt him at all. I'm trying to...
The payoff,
I think not only has no GOP legislator said anything about this, and I don't think a single Democratic congressman has said anything or congressperson has said a thing about this. I think everybody's just like, oh, okay. Like, really,
I don't think anyone's been asked about it because everyone's been so focused on the shutdown. I mean, the news cycle just changes so crazy.
Asked about it or not, you think somebody might have something to say about it. Like, hey, hello. I mean, like, this guy... I mean, these are... Kind of, I mean, look at what, you know, Bill Clinton was impeached, you know, over these kinds of allegations.
He was impeached for lying under oath, which is completely different from what Trump is.
Okay, you're right.
I mean, it's just the Trump could resign over this, but he has not committed a crime, and it happened when he was a private citizen.
He would never resign.
He would never resign over this.
I mean, I still think it's a big deal. The fact it's not getting much attention doesn't mean it's not a big deal. But the much more fascinating part of the story for me is the payoff. Yes, he had an affair.
Cullen was really stupid the way he did it too.
Oh
right?
My God, they're all idiots. They're all total morons. But not only did he have an affair, he paid, before an election, he paid off $130,000 to her to keep her quiet. They are way too, like, familiar with how this all works. I mean, it's not like, no one blinked an eye. Okay, president's got to go, or the candidate's got to go pay off another girl, get Michael Cohen to go do it. No big deal. How often does this happen?
And Cohen created like a company to make the payoff, so the payoff wouldn't come direct, like wouldn't be traced to them. But then he signed the incorporating documents for that company. Brilliant.
Well, because they probably got lazy. He's done it a lot of times. Yeah. Now, this is, I'll preface this with, this is purely speculative. I have no way to look into it deeper. But I think there's interesting stuff in his campaign finance reports that people, reporters should be looking at right now. Because you look at October 17th, the day that this all went down, and there is a shocking amount of activity where the Trump campaign was making payments to Trump properties, you know, like much bigger than he's ever made before. The biggest pre-election like hotel payoff he made. If you take all the payments to Trump International Hotels on 17th and the very next payment he made to a Trump International Hotel, which was like a couple days later, the total amount was $129,000.88. Which could be a coincidence for sure, because, I mean, he does have a lot of payments and it's not unusual for him at all to make payments to his own hotels. But that did seem pretty striking to me.
Do you think that was another payoff?
I'm just saying the money had to come from somewhere, and Trump never pays out of his own pocket if he can avoid it.
So you think, okay, so you think what could have happened is the money came from there to pay the hotels. The hotels funneled it to the LLC.
Yeah, I don't know enough to think anything, but I think it's very possible he could have done it that way. And the fact that the numbers are so close makes me wonder what more is going on. It wouldn't be hard to do.
That makes total sense.
He is making payments to his own hotels, so it's not weird for him to do that. And he controls the paperwork from the hotels. He owns them. He can do invoices from the hotels. So he generates invoices for amounts of $130,000 from four different entities.
Yeah.
Puts in the campaign.
And pays them out.
Campaign pays it out. And then each entity, each hotel makes a payment to Essential Consultants LLC of whatever amount. And it looks like they're splitting like a consultant's bill. No big deal.
So we got to figure out where the money that the LLC got came from, right?
I'm sure Mueller's all over it.
Yeah. Yay, exciting. All right. Good job, Susan. it's such a mess. You know, I'm listening to, by the way, so Slate has this great podcast called Slow Burn right now, which is, I'm just like on episode three of, but I don't get a lot of time to listen to podcasts, surprisingly.
Because you're too busy recording them.
I'm too busy making them. But it's about the Watergate scandal. I'm listening to it. And I'm, you know, like, no, I'm just like, what's a big deal? Nothing is, like, so much has happened in this past year in this presidency. I mean, including this kind of stuff. It's like, Watergate just doesn't seem like such a big deal anymore. It's, you know, the amount of scandal it generated, this administration has far surpassed it. It's the Teflon Don. Nothing's happening to him. All right, so we're going to get to the big one now. We are shut down. The government is shut down. The government of the United States has shut down. can I just preface
this by saying... On Trump's anniversary of his 1 year in office.
Yes. You know, and I think that's quite symbolic, fittingly
pretty,
so.
Yeah, pretty amazing stuff.
I was at a dinner last night with the very, very well-known journalist from the UK, Mehdi Hassan, and he was saying that he was like, listen, he's like, we don't even understand how this works, you know? Like, we don't shut down. Other countries do not have shutdowns. Only the United States has shutdowns. And I did a little bit of research, and... I came across this article from 2013 during the last shutdown, in which the Washington Post said that in 2010 and 2011, Belgium did not have an elected government for 589 days, okay? They did not have an elected government for almost 2 years, but at the same time, budgets were still passed, government workers were paid, and government services continued to be provided. It goes on to say that countries like Pakistan, where I'm from, and Colombia have had civil wars, coups, financial crises, defaults, but never a government shutdown. And yet here we are. So what's going on, folks?
You want the long or short of it?
I'm going to hand out, either one of you can lead us into it. Maybe we should do like what led up to this.
I've been talking about this and writing about it at least for the better part of the week. So here's what's happening. So the House and Senate, they are debating about whether to fund the government for 3 weeks over a continuing resolution stopgap. Or spending bill, if you will. And the disagreement is coming over whether to include a non-spending measure, i.e. DACA, which is the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, to reauthorize that permanently into a spending bill. Traditionally speaking, when the Senate and or when Congress, I should say, tries to pass bills, they try to keep it pretty one-dimensional. They don't try to add these type of riders into a spending bill to keep the government open. So Republicans
do that all the time.
No, but on spending bills like an omnibus or a CR, they usually try to keep it one dimensional.
Not the CR, but they always do. This is not an uncommon situation to have a spending bill be a partisan fight.
Oh no, it's not. Of course, it's always a partisan fight, but I'm just saying with respect to adding a non-spending measure to a spending bill, that doesn't typically happen. So that's where the disagreement is. And even though they both want to work on a solution to both DACA and reauthorizing CHIP, which again, Republicans actually conceded on the point of CHIP. They were actually going to allow CHIP, which is a non-spending bill or non-spending measure into the spending bill. And that was something they were going to, it was going to be authorized for like 6 years under this continuing resolution. So that's right now, that's where the differences lie. And it's like it's trench-like warfare, like in World War I, you know, neither side is giving up an inch and they need 60 votes to basically open of the government again, and that's basically in the Senate. The House, they already voted, they passed it. It's the Senate that's really having an issue on it. It's Democrats who are, they may not be up for re-election, but they certainly are opposed to the Trump administration and the GOP Congress.
Okay, but let's back up a bit. That's like the very, very past like 2 days history. This whole thing goes back even before the election. Trump vowed that he would repeal DACA on day one. Spoiler, did not happen. But it's always kind of like a bit, you know, it never went away.
I thought the wall was day one. I'm getting confused.
Oh, he had like 100 things on day one. It was okay. A lot of day one that didn't ever day one at all.
Okay.
And I remember back in like in February and March, you know, back in the early days when it was still unclear where Trump was going, where he really stood. And there were a bunch of articles out about how Stephen Bannon, of all people, was behind the saving of DACA. I wanted to quote one of them. According to two sources who regularly speak with the Trump administration, DACA is a settled issue. They point to chief strategist Steve Bannon as the man who preserved the current iteration of DACA. The victor of the debate with Attorney General Jeff Sessions and senior policy advisor Stephen Miller, who favored curtailing the program. Previous reports have cast Bannon as being on one end of the spectrum of rescinding DACA, and a more moderate group led by Chief of Staff Rince Priebus wanted to keep it. But BuzzFeed has learned that Bannon views DACA, which tends to be viewed more favorably than many other immigration policies, as a strategic asset in the coming immigration policy battles. Trump was never in favor of repealing DACA, said a source close to the president, which probably means Trump himself, to be honest. And okay, and all that sounds like self-serving bullshit. Like, I mean, it's what Bannon would say. Like, I saved DACA, give me credit. Except Bannon got fired on August 18th, and within a week, there's articles are going around about how, oh, Trump's going to take action on DACA. Going to take action on DACA any moment now. And then a week after that, he kills it. So that's kind of a little bit of evidence that the early
Bannon
articles
had
were right.
Something to do with it, yeah.
That Bannon was keeping DACA alive. And once Bannon was out, DACA was dead.
That's crazy.
I do think, though, some of the blame should go on to the Obama administration for, even though Obama, I think in his, and I'll give him at least some credit in thinking that he wanted to do the right thing by at least creating DACA. But it puts a lot of...
What else was he thinking about what he wanted to do? Of course he thought he was trying to do the right thing.
I'm just saying that the unintended consequences of his move is that he basically put 800,000 DACA recipients in legal limbo because
they were worse before that.
I know they were worse before that.
You can criticize the way he tried to do it and how it came about, but I'm pretty sure the DACA recipients themselves aren't going to be complaining the fact he chose to do something at all.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree that he tried to do something and I think he thought he was doing the right thing. I just think that he could have.
But I do agree, he could have done more.
That's what I'm saying.
Like
he could have done more.
They wouldn't pass a bill.
No, they wouldn't pass a bill, but.
The question is, does he do nothing or does he go ahead and try and do it unilaterally?
Look, he didn't turn his focus to immigration until really late in his presidency. And it was something really going in. I mean, I know a lot of immigration advocates were hoping would be something he focused on in the first half of his first term. And it just didn't happen.
Robbie, exactly. You're right on the money. I mean, the fact that he had a Democratic supermajority in both the House and Senate and didn't move on anything with respect to immigration.
I mean, we were expecting comprehensive immigration reform. We were expecting an entire comprehensive immigration reform.
And he got in a healthcare fight, which took up a lot of time and ammo.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not trying to say like, it, again, obviously it's not the perfect immigration situation, but we can debate whether or not it's a constitutionality of what Obama did with DACA, but there weren't other options.
I will also say this, as an immigration lawyer who did this, they got two year reprieves. They should have gotten longer reprieves. Just looking at like, especially knowing, you know, like the politics of this and how he's, like you said, he's caught up in other political battles. Instead of saying you got 2 year renewals, these kids should have gotten like 4 year.
Well, the question is about how much like executive power should be done unilaterally. So he was trying to do a compromise route for whatever reason.
That ship sailed. Yeah, but if you're going to go there, you like, give them 5 years. Give them 5 years.
If you're going to go big.
Yeah.
You know what? Anyway. In 5 years, they could at least get through college, right? I mean, like there's other things. I mean, I just felt like 2 years was really.
Just one point that I want to hone in on. And that's just something because a lot of this shutdown nonsense and, you know, part of my French, I don't like to swear a lot, but it is all bullshit. Like, it's really not about DACA or CHIP. It's really about getting the attention of the American people with respect to the November midterm elections.
It's about DACA. They have no other choice but to do it. It's either DACA or it's either now or never.
I don't think Democrats are invested about reforming immigration because they can use that to drive out Hispanic voters to win elections. I mean, that's
okay. It could be a twofer. Hold up, we get a bit. But I think we need some more context here for what's going on.
Sure.
So in September. Oh wait, let's go to August 1st. That's when Trump's going around saying, "I'm going to shut down the government if I don't get my wall." So, I mean, he did succeed in that. He wanted his wall. He shut the government down for it. And he said he was going to do it like 5 months ago. By September, he closes, he ends DACA, but he says, Congress's time to act is now. They have 6 months. I'll revisit the issue if Congress doesn't act. I don't know what that means, but no one does. So September goes into October, November, December. And through this time, we have like a bunch of sort of wishy-washy mixed comments going on. Trump seems to be saying a lot of the time that he's in favor of protecting dreamers. He's like, you know, the bill's got to have a lot of heart, or like, I love the dreamers.
This is a bill of love.
Of love. I'm so sorry.
Lots of
love. I actually do think Trump wants to keep DACA.
I think so too. I think he wants to use it as leverage to get what he wants to get. I mean,
I don't think Trump has any feelings one way or another. He's like a policy void.
But there's also one other interesting wrinkle into this story, and that's just because I caught it this past week when DHS, Department of Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen, said to John Dickerson on CBS This Morning that even if DACA is expired, ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, will not prioritize DACA recipients in terms of deportation.
That's meaningless.
It could be meaningless. It could also mean that they are not going to change anything in policy so long as the President of the United States doesn't tell them to do something different, which I can imagine.
They've already tried to deport dreamers. When they had the snafu of the reapplications and some were caught in the mail and didn't make it in time, already started trying to deport those guys.
I mean, look, the deportation is like the removal issue is like a later issue. What immediately impacts a lot of these people is that they lose their employment authorization. They lose the authorization to actually like do it. Like, you know, they have to go back in the shadows, whether or not ICE comes after them. They go back to being like, I can't go to school. I can't go to work.
Yeah. But let's keep going through October. This is when people start solidifying around the idea that, yes, we're going to have to be part of the spending bill. Paul Ryan in October was telling everyone, look, we're going to get DACA passed. We're going to like do it through the spending bill. Democrats will lead that. So we're not really that involved. It's all work out that way. The plan, like the Democrats and Republicans, were all talking the same way. And then we have December, the tax bill, and Flake, who, you know, I just imagine him as like the guy that's always going to try and kick Lucy's football. Never seems to learn. Like, he's like, well, they told me we're going to vote in January on DACA, so I agreed to vote for the tax bill. Yeah. So we roll into January. And last week, in fact, that feels like longer, Trump had his, no, guys, I swear I don't have Alzheimer's meeting. Right. And he tried to prove for an hour they didn't have Alzheimer's. And during that meeting, he is like, the messaging is very clear. He starts off like saying, we're all here because we're going to pass DACA. Question is how and when and what process. And he says, like, my positions are going to be what the people in this room come up with. I have no problem. We're going to come up with DACA. We're going to do DACA. Then we'll start in phase two, which is comprehensive immigration reform. After we do DACA, which should definitely be able to do that, then we'll look up a permanent solution for immigration. And then you folks are going to have to, you're going to have to come up with a solution. And when you do, I'm going to sign it.
But then when he was presented that, he said,
well,
no.
That, again, this is the problem with Trump.
It's the negotiating with Jell-O, like Chuck Schumer said this week.
Yeah. His frame of reference is only as long as the last conversation he had. Yeah. So thanks, like, you know, it's like the 9th or the 10th that happened. And things were looking pretty promising. Like, you know, it definitely fooled everyone into thinking that everyone actually wanted to pass DACA. But then there were signs that things were going off the rails. We had the Immigrants Are Terrorists memo that Trump came out with, which they released, on 16th, that said 3/4 of all terrorists are immigrants. And they claimed that the DHS did an analysis to determine that approximately 73% of all convicted terrorists are foreign born, which is actually false because DHS didn't do anything. This was all DOJ, which is disturbing in its own right.
Right. They put out a report that excluded all, basically, homegrown white extremist terror, like, you know, the right wing white nationalists, whatever you want to call it, terrorism.
All foreign born terrorists.
And they're like, all foreign born terrorism is foreign born, basically, are immigrants.
Oh, yeah. That was like, it was like 3 out of 4 terrorists in the United, like, terrorist attackers are foreign born.
And then DOJ won't say where those stats came from.
Right. If you're only looking at foreign born terrorists, then yeah, I guess that's true. I mean, if you're not, if you're going to exclude everybody who's like native, you know, sovereign citizen groups and all these other groups that exist. And they did. That's what, the that's what they did. But anyway, go on. Go on, Susan.
So then we have sort of the first little, I don't know if it's the first, but it's probably the biggest one so far, of the fracture between Trump and Kelly. Kelly, John Kelly, his chief of staff, had been going around telling Democratic people on the Hill that Trump had not been, quote, fully informed when he promised to make the wall. And he told them that Trump's views were evolving on the issue. Now, Trump did not like this one bit, no siree. And he immediately tweeted out, "The wall is the wall. It has never changed or evolved from the first day I conceived of it. Parts will be, of necessity, see-through. And it was never intended to be built in areas where there's natural protection, such as mountains, wastelands, or tough rivers or water." So for a couple days then, it shifted back where Schumer and Trump were talking. Like, okay, maybe deal can still happen. And then things went totally off the rails. Friday came around. There was no deal. House passed it. Senate couldn't do it. They didn't have enough. They didn't need 60. They didn't have 50 to do it. So they were not going to pass a bill regardless of filibuster. And then we had this remarkable weekend of controlled chaos. I think best way to put it.
I do want to say that what we're seeing this weekend, this particular shutdown compared to the 2013 shutdown, which Ted Cruz, senator from Texas, really took the heat for, and most people would probably agree that he was the reason for the shutdown. This is a little bit stickier, at least in my objective opinion, that, you know, both Chuck Schumer and Trump seem equally responsible for the shutdown. I think the fact that they couldn't come to an agreement on it, on any particular deal, and the fact that, you know, if we're going by Trump's logic, who says that the president is the one at fault, then yes, Trump is pretty much the sole person at fault for the shutdown. But, and there's a huge but, Schumer and whoever he has voting for this bill certainly could have come to an agreement to at least keep the government open for another 3 weeks to then work on DACA and CHIP. And that's the only reason why I say it's a lot more confusing this time around, and it's harder to pin the blame on one particular person. However, I will say that both DNC and RNC are going to just dump so much money into ad campaigns to try to spin this in a way that will make them look good. And by just Trump tweeting, and remember, the government shutdown doesn't shut down his Twitter account.
If only.
Just because Trump is tweeting and the media is going to be saying one thing, I think there are going to be more people who are going to be blaming Democrats and Chuck Schumer for the reason for the shutdown and not Trump, simply because there's so much distrust in the media and there's also so much distrust in Washington and Congress.
So, Susan, how many hours a day do you think you spend staring at a screen, computer or phone?
I don't want to admit that.
Just tell me. Ballpark it.
21? No.
Seriously. Too many. It feels like that, doesn't it? Way too many. But I would say it's fair to say a lot of people spend, like, you know, maybe 6, 8, 10 hours a day looking at a screen. TV screen, a computer screen, and our phones. We are always looking at a screen. And that puts a lot of strain on your eyes.
Yeah. It's not great, but sometimes it's necessary. So there's something you can do, though, to try and help it out. And that's Felix Gray. It's a new company with glasses that can help you out if you're stuck at a screen all day. Their lenses are specially designed to filter blue light and eliminate glare from screens, which are the two main culprits behind digital eye strain.
Yeah, because our eyes were not made to stare at screens all day. And, you know, people experience dryness, migraines, blurry vision. You know, these are the reasons you need to protect your eyes. And these glasses have been fantastic. I got my pair just last week. I actually got the Faraday in black. They've got really stylish glasses that you can use. And I know, Susan, what did you get?
I got the Jemisons. They're all art scientists.
Oh, really? All of them are? Oh, is that? That's interesting. Okay, I didn't even notice that. But I will say this. You know, Felix Gray's frames, like I said, they're beautiful. They're handcrafted from premium Italian acetate. And it's the same stuff that, by the way, Versace uses to make their glasses. They look really, really nice. Like Susan mentioned, they have blue light filtering technology. It's embedded into the lens. So they're effective even, you know, they don't have that telltale yellow tint. They're totally clear. They look like totally clear lenses. So you can't, nobody can tell that you're wearing glasses to like filter any kind of blue. And you can get them in both non-prescription and reading lenses, but prescription lenses are coming soon. All of their orders come with free shipping and free returns. So to try them out, you've got nothing to lose except for that annoying eye strain.
So give your eyes the break they deserve. Go to felixgrayglasses.com/45th to try a pair of Felix Gray computer glasses and discover a smarter way to work. That's felixgrayglasses.com/45th.
felixgrayglasses.com/45th.
Forget who the hell is to blame here. There's not one person, obviously. It's way too big a situation for that. How did this happen? So, like, theoretically, there shouldn't have been a shutdown. Because theoretically, we all agree. Like, Republicans, Democrats, we're all on the same page. They all want the same damn thing. And that was the meeting last week on the 9th or 10th or whatever it was. They were all saying, we all want DACA. Now, if that was true, we wouldn't be here today. But we are. And it seems very clear that there's a whole host of problems going on. But I think the first and primary, well...
Democrats wanted a clean DACA bill. That's
no,
what they said.
The problem is that no one knows what the hell Trump wants. His only concrete policy position is, I want wall. Give me wall. Yeah. That's the only thing in his head that's a fixed star.
Right. And you know what's interesting is, again, I read that Chuck Schumer, you know, went back, I think yesterday, and actually offered Trump. He said, we'll fund your wall. And I don't know if it was a test. And I don't know exactly.
Well, he says that they've all had an agreement. And then he went away. And like 2 hours later, Kelly and Miller get to him. And suddenly it's all gone.
Yeah, it's all
but
gone.
Here's the thing, though. It's not just Trump that's the problem. I mean, we even had what's-his-face, McConnell, who had that pretty great line about how I'm looking for something that President Trump supports, and he has not yet indicated what measure he is willing to sign.
Incredible.
As soon as we figure out what he is for, then I would be convinced that we are not just spinning our wheels. Okay, that is totally true and totally fair. It is very hard to negotiate this kind of deal when you don't actually know where the president stands, but... He's not the only one who has failed to indicate where he is. Because McConnell himself is totally elusive in this issue. He refuses to nail himself down on where he stands. He's basically just being a tabula rasa that like reflects Trump every single time Trump changes. So as terms of his real, like his actual internal policy position, you're kind of reading tea leaves, but he is not publicly given any position. The one statement he's given that was at all sympathetic was right after Trump was saying like DACA needs to have a lot of heart. And McConnell said, I'm very sympathetic to that situation, and I'm anxious to see what the president decides to do, which isn't a position at all, actually.
You know, there's something interesting about Mitch McConnell. He's kind of stayed away from, I mean, like, he's been very vocal within this shutdown debate, and he's obviously become a chief negotiator, at least in terms of finding a deal. But the fact that he's not really lumped into the conversation of the shutdown, I think it's pretty staggering, just because all this really does, if the Democrats get blamed for this, and I'm sure they're going to be most, we're only going to have to see until this week the effects of the shutdown, since at least it's going to continue for us in the foreseeable future. Yeah. But if the Democrats get blamed for this, Mitch McConnell is only increasing his own power.
And that's the
establishment, that's the swamp, that's everything that Trump is trying to work against. And that, I think, in the long run, will probably hurt Trump's agenda, at the very least.
I mean, McConnell is very open about the fact he's a total snake who likes to tackle popular positions by hanging in the shadows, making attacks that he can deny, and tries to cause death by a thousand cuts without ever having to actually say out loud what his own position is.
Yeah.
I mean, he's always done that. Like a couple of years back, he, when they're dealing with Obama, he was telling his fellow Republicans, the key is to stymie and undermine Obama, but to do so in subtle ways. We have a new president with an approval rating in the 70% area. We do not take him on frontally. We find issues where he can win, and we begin to take him down one issue at a time. We create an inventory of losses. So it's Obama loss in this, Obama loss in that. And we wait for the time where the image has been damaged enough where we can take him on. That's what they're doing with DACA. DACA has an 86% approval rating. They cannot say in public what they want to do. They're doing it this way because it's the only way they can possibly win. And to them, and here's the problem, half the Republicans think that they're actually trying to save DACA, and the other half are trying the damnedest to kill it. So we are basically now in a showdown. Again, if everyone had actually wanted DACA like we're saying we do, we aren't in a shutdown. It's the fact that the half the Republicans aren't publicly stating their own position that has led to this. If Democrats had known where Republicans stood, it'd be much more clean cut. Like, we would know what's going to happen going forward with Republicans, what's going for Democrats. Instead, we're sitting here trying to figure out which side is trying to do what. And that's where my chart comes in, Rabia, that the one you talked about earlier.
Oh, yes. That very impressive. I wish maybe
I was trying to keep track of everyone's positions and like
you probably should have tweeted that. It should be the Heather image.
Yeah, I need this. I need this was my favorite.
This was more of a private chart and a bit more sarcastic than I usually make it. But basically trying to like keep track of who was actually gunning for what here. And I realized that we don't actually have any proof whatsoever that the Republicans in charge want to keep DACA. And I think that that's why the shutdown is going to continue, because Democrats cannot trust that DACA will survive if they let this go by. I think their only opportunity to save DACA is right now with spending bill. And if they don't tie it to that, DACA's done.
Yeah, I mean, DACA, I think, will survive. It's just the lasting damage and what this is going to do for the Democrats' momentum is probably the most...
But why will survive? There's no evidence that beyond Flake and Graham, who are total patsies, that they want to keep it alive. They actually want to kill it, or at the very least, try and extract as much blood as possible and then give the Dreamers a few beans they can take away later.
I mean, I don't know why, but I feel like Trump will end up extending it on his own.
That's actually how it's going to happen. We have this like dramatic, epic showdown, like Battle of the Titans with like Schumer and McConnell, and this great like metaphorical battle of good and evil. And then Trump's going to tweet out, "I extended DACA, y'all."
Yeah, that's what I actually think is going to happen. To be honest, I really do. Because he doesn't give a flying F about any of these folks. And I think at the end of the day, he does. I think he wants, I mean, he has always spoken positively about, you know, giving relief to Dreamers.
When the last person he talked to was positive about Dreamers. When he talks to like Kelly or Miller, he calls them illegal immigrants. So his like whole frame of reference for DACA.
No, I don't think that's true. I don't think that's true. I think when he talks to them, he basically says Dreamers fine, but DACA fine, but we've got, you know, violent illegal immigrants, and so we need a wall. I mean, they keep reminding him that that's, you know, forget DACA. Like, DACA is the bait to get that security measure, to get like increased deportations, to get like focus on, you know, criminal immigrants and all that. I think that's what it is. I don't remember him ever publicly saying that he thinks Dreamers or DACA recipients are criminals.
He's called them illegal immigrants several times so far. And during the campaign, someone asked him, and he said,
"Unauthorized immigrants."
"I want Dreamers to come from this country. You mentioned Dreamers. You mentioned Dreamers.
He's an idiot.
I want Dreamers to come from the United States. I want people in the United States to have children. I want them to have dreams. We're always talking about Dreamers for other people. I want the children going to the United States to be Dreamers also, and they're not dreaming right now." He has definitely come down hard before on Dreamers and not been favorable of it. So I don't think there's any. I don't think he has a position one way or another. I don't think he's inherently wanting to kill DACA or inherently wanting to save it. He's just reflecting whoever he talked to last. Now, on the wall, this is actually the one place, probably in anything, that Trump does have a genuine fixed policy position, which is he wants it.
He wants it. He wants a see-through wall.
Gonna build a see-through wall.
Glass wall. Invisible wall.
Okay. Just make an invisible wall and tell him it's there. Like, just tell him it's like you can't see it because it's invisible and we're all good to go.
I think whatever Trump, whatever legislation or piece of or executive move that Trump goes with that makes him look the best, that's what he's going to do.
Yeah.
And I mean, we just have to remember that Trump, you know, he's not nuanced on policy. We know this. I mean, he's a non-politician, an outsider who's running the federal government. And one of the most powerful countries in the world. And he is not fully aware of what... I mean, like, he almost got tricked into agreeing to do a clean DACA bill at the request of Democratic Senator Dianne.
He did not know what he was doing.
From Dianne Feinstein. She wanted to...
It wasn't a trick. She just said the words, and he agreed. Like, there was no trick
involved.
Yeah, she's
like, yeah, we want to do a clean DACA bill. Yeah, that sounds great.
Yeah.
Like,
Yeah, like, clean is good. I like clean things. Let's do clean DACA.
I mean, but, you know, let's talk, talking about the wall for a second, though. I mean, like, you know, discuss kind of like what happened between John Kelly and him.
So my chart has like it has people's positions on DACA and the wall, and it has their public position and their private position. And for the wall, basically, the only one who wants the damn wall is Trump. Literally everyone else realizes the wall is the stupidest fucking idea they've ever heard of. And some of them are pretending otherwise, but there's no one who is actually consistently in private saying, oh yeah, we want a see-through wall.
And then you have, I mean, Kelly publicly said, well, you know, his position has evolved, and Trump angrily the next day countered him and basically said, nope, a wall is a wall. I just want the wall.
The wall is the wall and always has been the wall.
Which makes me think, you know, on one hand, I keep thinking that, you know, I mean, the reports are that, like, he has conversation with some congressional leaders. It looks like they're getting somewhere. Then he goes back and Kelly's got his ear, and then that's the end of it. I keep going back and forth between, it seems like Kelly's got a lot of power versus, when is he going to fire Kelly? I think he might fire Kelly. I don't know which it is.
I mean, Kelly has power, but the wall is literally Trump's only policy position. Like, he does stand by that.
He's a child. He needs it. Yeah.
He needs it.
I think for him, it would be like the win. You know, he kept making these promises to his, and for much of his base, I think those are kind of the simple, you know, these kind of really symbolic things matter at the end of the day.
I mean, like, a wall is like, it'd be a lot of fun for him. He'd be like, I'm going to build a wall under budget, under time. Look at me building a wall. It'd be a great vacation for him.
I mean, for Trump,
he wants to actually build it himself.
For Trump's base, like, this is the gold mine. This is the championship game. This is the Super Bowl. Everything that they put their chips on in Trump is him building the wall, curbing illegal and legal immigration, ending chain migration, ending the visa lottery system. I mean, these are all things that a majority of his supporters want. If it comes at the cost of authorizing DACA permanently, I think most of them will be okay with it. I know there are going to be at least some people, at least at Breitbart, who are going to say, oh, Amnesty Don is, you know, granting 800,000 Dreamers, you know, amnesty. This is not what we voted for. You know, there's going to be a majority of Trump supporters who are at least not of the Breitbart ilk who will say, oh, he at least got what he campaigned on. He's delivering on his promises.
Right. Yeah, I think that's the wild card here too, though, is that we are so detached from actual policy. I mean, we have everyone agrees, and everyone other than Trump and government agrees the wall's a dumbass idea. They're going to build his fucking wall because it's the only way they can get anything.
Even Democrats want the wall. I mean, Luis Gutierrez, Democrat from Illinois, he's like, we have no problem building the wall so long as Dreamers are protected. I mean, Democrats want this
wall
too.
That's not how he put it. He said, if it's the blood and money it takes, I will get my hands dirty with mortar and brick to keep the Dreamers safe. That was not like, I want the wall. That was, if this is the stupid requirement we have to do to save these lives, you know what? My pride and my $20 billion, I'll give them up.
That's basically saying he would rather have the wall built if it protects Dreamers. I mean, that's...
Yeah. That's where they are now. Yeah. But that's not wanting... That's very different from wanting the wall. Right. That's like saying, like, someone says, you have to eat 100 bags of gummy bears if you want to survive. Like, well, fuck, I'll eat the gummy bears.
Gummy bears are delicious, okay? This is something that's unpleasant and something that's hard for them to swallow.
No one wants to eat those. They'll do it because they have to. But no one is wanting gummy bears.
Well, look, there's the issue of wanting the wall. There's also the issue of funding the wall, which is another, right? Like, who's going to fund this? I mean, like, yeah, sure, he campaigned on, I'm going to build the wall, but that was not the whole campaign promise.
Right.
So Mexico's going to pay for the wall. And now you've got Congress saying, well, maybe we'll pay for it. I mean, so...
I went on a mission to find like one solid policy position that McConnell took a stand on with regards to immigration. Mm. And the only one that was like really an actual answer was, is Mexico going to pay for the wall? And he said, no.
There you go.
Well, yeah, I mean, because directly it's going to come out of, you know, Congress's congressional appropriations, because that's how all spending in the government works. And then if Trump ever imposes some sort of tariff on Mexico that ends up, you know, offsetting the cost of the wall, which he requested $18 billion. I saw a Senate summary this past week that said that the Senate would authorize $1.5 billion, which is $16.5 billion short of what Trump requested. I don't know how he's going to get $18 billion from Mexico simply out of trade tariffs. It doesn't add up right now.
So it's actually what I think will happen if the wall does start going forward. So Trump's really afraid that Democrats are going to screw him over. He's accused Schumer several times of like partially funding the wall and trying to trick him by saying like, here, I'll give you $1 billion and then not give him $19 billion. That's not the Democrats' play. I think if that happens, if Trump does get tricked, it's going to be the Freedom Caucus that does it, because they're the ones who keep trying to say border security and hope that Trump hears the word the wall. Like, they only ask for funding for border security. They don't want to actually line item the wall in there. They just want to, you know, get a lot of more agents, do whatever stuff that actually would work to make the border more, you know, locked down. Whatever you agree about, whatever you think about the policy there, like, it would be more effective to do it their way. So they're trying to pull a fast one kind of by calling it border security, when really what they mean is hopefully Trump thanks for saying the wall.
I think one of the more interesting storylines out of all of this is that I can see the government being shut down for a little bit, but what if the agencies that are identifying these non-essential employees decide, hey, we're not going to need you after the government reopens, and use that as a way to shrink the size of government?
They might try that. They're trying to do that indirectly already. I wouldn't be surprised at all.
Yeah, I mean, like, I have friends and family in the government. Some are essential, some are non-essential. They have no idea what the future is going to hold.
The worst case is like the ones that are like making the essential cut, but they're all alone trying to man.
Like, it's crazy. I mean, it's in some ways the government shutdown is good in the sense that it forces agencies to identify who's essential and non-essential. But at the same time, you're also, you know, these are people's lives, livelihoods, and you know, you're sending that could be a bunch of people who go in the unemployment line. What are you going to do about it? And then, of course,
actually can't run the government the way they're doing it now. I mean, yeah, they have to do like some like triage there.
Right.
It's not actually a functional.
For, I mean, detainees who get moved for hearings, and people who are not detained, who maybe have to travel, take off time work and show up and are looking, might be facing actually getting arrested right there at the hearing and leaving. I mean, but nobody has any idea. The website has no information. People are making phone calls. They have no idea if immigration court is in session or not. These are federal courts. It's a much bigger kind of shit show right now, because there isn't any, not a lot of people are getting like the memo on whether or not they're supposed to show up or not show up. But you know, can we talk a little bit about what the, and especially for like folks who are listeners, we do have listeners who, you know, in Canada and other countries, and they're probably like, what does this even mean to be shut down when the US government shuts down? I actually have a theory. You know, I saw Eric Trump, I think he must have been on Fox, said that what
was it, Judge like, you know, Jeanine over the phone?
I don't know. But he said something to the effect that it helps us, or it helps us if it shuts down. I don't know what he was saying. And Trump said something similar to that too a while back, where he goes, you know, if there's a shutdown, it just helps us. I don't know what that means. But I wonder if Trump thinks that means he gets to go golfing, or I'm sorry, I mean, like, he gets to go, like, he gets, his position is also kind of shut down, and so he gets some time off.
He can't
off.
Go to parties, though. He really wanted to go to Mar-a-Lago this weekend. He couldn't do that.
Yeah, it looked like a horrific party, to be honest.
Oh, my God. Did
more executive time. More executive time for him.
The pictures were kind of like, yeah, that's not a party you could pay me to be frank.
$100,000 to go to that party? Like, at least I thought it'd be fancy looking.
Yeah, they had to. They were serving caviar with plastic spoons. That was.
I mean, I would be happy eating caviar with plastic. I don't know if I like caviar or not.
Yeah, so that just means
if
Susan.
I did, I'd be
Susan,
fine having
that
plastic
just means
spoons.
You're not elite.
I would not trust caviar from a place that's got like 13 health violations in its most recent
Susan,
inspection. Who knows
I was
where
just
that's
say,
been?
Just to say, just to your point, Susan. Just because you eat caviar with a plastic spoon, it just means you haven't made it. You're not elite enough. This is Trump's let them eat cake moment right here.
Probably.
The Mar-a-Lago peasants.
Trump was eating a Big Mac while they were eating their caviar. Anyhow, but let's talk a little bit about what the shutdown actually means. It actually does not mean that every single federally funded agency and program services comes to a stop. But like you guys said, you know, all non-essentials, whoever's considered non-essential is going to be put on furlough. In 2013, those folks who were put on furlough were actually later for the time. They did not get paid. You know, they were home. I don't know how long did that shutdown last in 2013?
By the way, 16 days.
16 days. Okay, by the way, this is, I think, the first government shutdown ever in which the same party controls, like, Congress Everything. And executive, like, all of it, all the branches of government. And, you know, the shutdown, it's pretty remarkable. But I remember in 2013, you know, one thing that people have to think about if they're trying to, like, take any trips in this time is National Park Services, all this stuff will be shut down. The National Zoo, museums, such things are not going to be open to the public anymore. As far as the military, Trump has been tweeting a lot about the military and saying that, and kind of using that against the Democrats and saying the Democrats don't want to fund the military, they want illegals to come in, you know, all this kind of stuff. Basically saying that they won't give me the wall and they're hurting our military because of that. The military, nobody goes on furlough in the military, but I do understand that they might not get, active service members might not get paid for this time, correct?
Well, McConnell's blocked every attempt to pass a bill that would allow them to get paid in 2013.
Right. You know what? Should we listen to that?
This shouldn't take very long, but I was most disappointed tonight when the President of the United States put out a statement that tried to divide us based on party when it came to support of our military. There is no such division. Everyone in this chamber knows it. And so as we have in other instances where we have had a shutdown, I remember in 2013 we did this right off the bat, I want to make sure that tonight we send a very clear signal that we don't want one moment to pass with there being any uncertainty of any soldier anywhere in the world that they will be paid for the valiant work they do on behalf of our national security. I ask unanimous consent that the Senate proceed to the immediate consideration of calendar number 36, H.R. 1301, that the amendment at the desk for continuing appropriations for pay and death penalty benefits for members of the armed services be considered and agreed to, the bill as amended be considered read a third time and passed, and the motions to reconsider be considered made and laid upon the table with no intervening action or debate.
Is there objection?
Mr. President, reserving the right to object, we passed similar legislation during the government shutdown back in 2013. My hope is that we can restore funding for the entire government before this becomes necessary. I'm going to object for tonight, but we'll discuss again tomorrow. Therefore, I object.
Objection is heard.
So, yeah, that's Mitch McConnell objecting to the possibility of... Now, why do you think that happened, Siraj? What's going on there? Why did he object to this funding for the military?
I have no idea.
You're a resident Republican. Come on.
I am not Republican. I write for a conservative outlet, which has a lot of Republicans in it, but I know.
You are our resident conservative? Is that fair?
Libertarian.
Resident intermediate.
Right-leaning libertarian.
Right, immediate. Okay, so then what do you think, Susan, what do you think happened? What's really going on here? Why would he do that?
He's trying to make this all fall on the Democrats. Mm-hmm. He may or may not succeed. So he wants to make it hurt as much as possible. He wants to make it a painful, embarrassing, and terrible shutdown. Gambling, he can make the Democrats bear the blame for it. He's not trying to minimize any damage from it. He's trying to maximize it.
Maximize it. Well, right now, the military is funded through February 1st. But after February 1st, you know, about 1.3 million active duty military will be expected to go to work, but not get paid for it. So a shutdown is going to impact a lot of the agencies, Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms. If you wanted a gun permit, can't get it right now. Essential services like Social Security, Air Traffic Control, TSA will be funded, even though some of the employees might not be there. The U.S. Postal Service will still take its time getting its mail to you. And members of Congress, by the way, will continue to receive paychecks. So there you go.
Yay. Mm.
That, yeah.
If there's anyone you want to receive a paycheck during a shutdown, it's a member of Congress.
Definitely. Definitely.
Well, just say right now, we're recording this on Sunday night, so it's been a lot of upheavals. We were earlier expecting a vote at 1 a.m. They ended up not doing that and not going for a 10 a.m. or noon tomorrow. I don't even know. But where we ended, so we had the whole crazy weekend. I mean, just the highlights, we had what? Vice President Pence overseas in front of the troops, using them as a backdrop to attack Democrats and claim that, like, Democrats are the ones not trying to pay them. Again, that's not a thing that happens in the U.S. until now. We have we have Graham, who has apparently given up on any hope of replacing Tillerson and gone back to full-on opposing Trump, now blaming Stephen Miller for the entire immigration negotiations blowing up. He said, "We look like we care more about party flag than the American flag. How could you take an 80% issue and screw it up?" Yeah, well, they're only screwing it up if you think you actually want to pass it, Lindsay. Sorry. That's where you're going wrong there. They don't actually want to pass it. They're trying to destroy an 80% issue. And in that case, they're doing pretty good at it. Oh, we did have that bonkers ad. Did you hear that one? Where they accused Democrats of being responsible for murders by immigrants?
Yeah, I mean, that's just another... I mean, it's... It drives news.
Who funded that ad? Who is that?
It had to be the RNC.
Oh, let's roll tape. Let's roll tape.
That's illegal immigrant Luis Bracamontes, charged with murdering two police officers.
I wish I could kill more of those motherfuckers.
It's pure evil. President Trump is right. Build the wall. Deport criminals. Stop illegal immigration now. Democrats who stand in our way will be complicit in every murder committed by illegal immigrants. President Trump will fix our border and keep our families safe.
I'm Donald Trump, and I approve this message.
So, you know, after this came out, the White House issued a statement denying that they are behind it, despite the fact that it ends with, "I'm Donald J. Trump, and I support this message."
I would not be surprised if it was a conservative-leaning PAC. Or the RNC directly.
No, he endorses it. He's on, like, he's in the closer saying, like, they're responsible for it.
Or at least endorses it, approves it.
I mean, is it like the Trump campaign or what? I'm just curious.
But he approves it. He was the one who gave the approval. He knew of it. He approved it.
Yeah, but who basically?
Well, he was denying they had any involvement. They approved it.
Yeah, but I don't know whose ad. I mean, I don't know whose ad it was. I'm not sure, but anyway.
So then Graham brought the fire out. So as long as Stephen Miller is in charge of negotiating immigration, we're going nowhere. He's been an outlier for years, probably hearkening back to fights they had when Jeff Sessions was still in the Senate. And the White House responded, "As long as Senator Graham chooses to support legislation that sides with people in the country illegally and unlawfully instead of our own American citizens, we're going nowhere." So where does that leave us now? And here's my take on it.
What's going to happen this week, Susan?
You know, I think for, like I said earlier, it is now or never for DACA. I firmly believe that the stronger and predominant forces in the Republican Party want to kill DACA. They would like to try and deport as many as they possibly could. And what they cannot openly oppose DACA because it's too popular. Like, you can't get 87% of Americans to agree that it's better to eat cake than rocks. Like, it doesn't happen. But Americans are overwhelmingly united behind DACA. So Republicans can't oppose it publicly. What they can do is slowly kill it. What they're doing now, have Trump rescind it, have Senate and House fail to get a bill together. You know, everyone delays, there's chaos. Come March, it's dead forever. That's their goal right now.
But, you know, can I ask you something, Susan? I mean, like, I wonder about that because given what the landscape looks like for them in 2018. I mean, it doesn't seem actually being publicly supportive of DACA, I think, would really help their chances of gaining more Latino voters.
But they actually want to kill it. So they're not really looking at the voters. They're trying to, you know, make America wider again.
Well, you know, and the cost of this, you know, there was an article out this week, and I mentioned last week how much it would cost to try to arrest, detain, deport, remove all these people. It's going to be the billions. There's also going to be a cost of billions of dollars lost in federal tax revenue, from their income. So it's going to be a big hit on the economy, too.
Yeah, but I think that they believe they can get out of this without taking a hit, and they might be right. I think that unfortunately, the only ones who really care here enough to, like, force this through is going to be the anti-DACA Republicans because they really want to see these people not in the country or at least not supported here.
But that's such a small minority. I mean, most people are in support of DACA.
Oh, outside of Congress, yeah. But Republicans in the White House and Congress, they absolutely want it gone. And I think once the pro-DACA Republicans in Congress realize that their colleagues are actually, they're totally dead serious about this, I don't think they're going to put up a huge fight about it. They're going to let McConnell and Ryan delay and delay and, like, you know, oh, let's do it next month. Let's do it next week until it's over. And then they'll just pretend like, oh, it's because Democrats caused chaos in Congress and nothing happened. That's what they're setting up right now. They're going to make this be a thing like, oh, we would have passed DACA, but Democrats caused so much chaos it can't happen now. So for me, the only question is how long the Democrats are going to hold out for Dreamers. And it comes down to two things. Are they going to be like Flake and Graham and be gullible idiots who actually believe McConnell when he says that they're going to actually take this really seriously and do something about it? Or are they going to realize what I think most of them are realizing right now? GOP is full of shit. They do not, as it stands right now, unless Trump, you know, has a bad night and just tweets something out before Miller or Kelly can stop him, they don't want DACA.
That's actually my prediction. I'm predicting that Trump is going to extend it on his own.
That's the other reason this is going to be a very long shutdown, possibly, because you just never know what the guy who's actually got the power is going to do. But in a normal world, in a normal universe, a normal political spectrum, with a president who is not, like, chaotic evil, you would...
Jell-O. Jell-O is delicious. Chaotic Jell-O.
This is much better. Yeah. They should realize that this is not going to pass. It's, if they do not tie it to the spending bill, they don't get another chance until they obtain all the levers of power again. So,
which could be around the corner, to be fair.
No, because Trump can still veto it, and I don't think they could possibly get enough to get a veto-proof majority. Mm. But at the end of the day, I also don't think this is a game Democrats can win in the short term. The Miller-Kelly faction is totally okay with harming DACA recipients, and McConnell and Ryan they won't enjoy it necessarily, but they're not really going to blink about it. And they have endless hostages.
Just pushing back on your point, Susan, just because I believe that no matter what the Trump White House does with respect to DACA, even if they reauthorize it, they can say, and they'll say this all the time because they've said it before, is that this is not amnesty. And that's the way that they're going to try to spin it.
Think that's off the table. I think that's, I don't even think really the current debate involves giving citizenship or, you know, permanent amnesty to DACA recipients. But what it sounds like is that the Democrats believe that it's possible to get a bill together that gives more permanent protections at least.
Well, I can tell you that if Trump doesn't do anything with respect to DACA, like if he lets it die, I will bet you $100 that he will never hear the end of it from Democrats, and that will be the chief campaign issue going forward into the 2018 midterms, and Democrats will crush it in November. Like they will take it, the House. I'm sorry, they'll take the Senate. They'll have a very good chance of taking the House. Right now, I'm like 60-40 thinking that they're gonna take the House, but like, of course, you know, more people are politically engaged now. I mean, you saw the Women's March this past weekend. People are going out and protesting for the first time ever. And, you know, people are opening their eyes, at least, with respect to what is going on in government. And what they see is a bunch of chaos, and they hate it. And I think that's going to drive more people out to the polls. And the Republicans are going to be – they're going to suffer. I mean – this is the one thing. This is the one thing I will say that helps Republicans, and that is the GOP tax bill. If people see more money in their bank accounts because the Republicans cut taxes, that will be their saving grace, and that will be the one thing that they can run on and say, hey, look, we gave you more money that you can do with however you want. And that might be the only thing I could think of that will stave off a huge blue wave in November.
Well, that's why I said in the short term, I don't think this is a game Democrats can win. But campus being short term, I don't think that they can come out. They're not willing to cause massive harm to people. Other side is. They will lose a short term fight. I do think long term, in 2018 and 2020, that's their best hope of coming back from this, of giving protections. I think probably I'd give it better than even chance that DACA's dead in the short term.
All right. On that happy note, we're going to wrap up this week's episode, and I'm sure we'll have plenty to talk about next week. Thank you, Siraj. Thank you, Susan.
Thank you, guys.
It was a really interesting conversation. And
all right, Robbie, you can go. But Siraj, give me a mini update on this Patriots shit you're talking about, because my only sports knowledge comes from you these days.
Oh, sure. So, I didn't even share that. So, All right. So if you're a big football fan, which I am, and I'm also a big New England Patriots fan, they're going to Super Bowl 52, as well as the Philadelphia Eagles. Now, if you recall, President Trump is actually, I wouldn't say he's a very big Patriots fan, but he likes Bob Kraft, he likes Bill Belichick, and he loves Tom Brady. So this whole war that we saw in September with the players kneeling during the national anthem to raise awareness for police brutality and racial inequality that Trump basically tweeted about and basically kind of went to war over, that brings a nice wrinkle into this whole war with the NFL, because you see a lot of Trump supporters are boycotting the NFL over their national anthem protest. If the Patriots win, you know, they'll be invited to the White House and they'll probably go. But will this end the war between Trump and the NFL, or Trump supporters in the NFL? That's really a toss-up right now. And I can totally see I think the Patriots are going to win just because they're my team and I believe in them, and it's Tom Brady. And, you know, they're going up against the Eagles, who they beat before in 2005. And this is just – it's one of those things where I can totally see that this beef gets squashed.
Patriots will never be what brings the country together. I know enough about football to know that.
The Patriots have inspired me. And anyways, that's an interesting anecdote. I thought our listeners would appreciate that. And go Pats. Hope they bring in number six, tie the Pittsburgh Steelers for the most all-time Super Bowl wins. And Brady would solidify his greatest of all-time status, his GOAT status. And, I'll just say Bismillah beforehand. Bismillah.
So, Raj, I have a confession.
What's
the
up?
There were some games on today. I guess it was this game. And I asked my dad, there's some game. I was like, is this the Super Bowl? That's where I'm at.
No, these are the games to play in the Super Bowl. These are the AFC and NFC championships. But, hey, I appreciate you for wanting to learn.
Literally, I want to see is someone in Philadelphia try and climb a grease pole.
Hey, they already did.
Did they succeed?
They succeeded. Oh, yeah. You got to go on Twitter and check it out. It's hilarious.
That's where I'm going now.
Awesome. All right, guys. Until next week, have a good week, then.
Listeners. You too. Take care.
Take care.
A big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan. We have been produced by Long Arc Digital Media, and you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is @45thpod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. And guess what? You can even leave us a voice message. Call us at 202-670-8345, and you never know, we might just play your message on the air. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.